Chapter 10, The Great Inventor.
Squeak! Squeak! Ah! Squeak, squeak, squeak!
The Chikamizan Zono, or Greater Demon of Zench, or Feathered Lord, or Watching Lord of Change, to name but a few of his countless titles, though his own name was known only to himself and to the highest, most exalted of the Chaos Gods, Zench, he of indescribable majesty and cunning, source of the Feather Lord's secret name, and also of his very being, spread his wings and flew through the serried heavens of the warp. His feather-edged form glittered with a million colours, sharp and flashing. His long neck craned this way and that as he descended through the countless levels of the Immaterium. His staring eyes, deep with wisdom, scanned glory after glory, bathed in supernal light that would have blinded any mortal creature, revealing gorgeous palaces, relentless conflicts, plots and counterplots. All were naked to the probing eyes of the watching Lord of Change. Yet all this splendour, of a scale greater than the galaxy it enshrouded, was non-physical. Its substance was that of thought, emotion, intention, disembodied consciousness. The bodies of its creatures, their towering palaces, the paradises, the purgatories, the places of abomination, were only apparent. In truth, nothing was there but psychic force. There was another realm, a seemingly dark realm, towards which the Feathered Lord now descended, the realm of matter. The non-physical Immaterium and the physical Materium had a terrible hunger for one another. Every physical being longed for the freedom and ecstasy of the unfettered spirit. Every spiritual being craved after a physical existence so as to fully realize itself. Some cosmic law kept the two apart, yet it was possible, it would be possible, for them to combine in some monstrous new birth. Only the fact that there existed in the physical realm a god as powerful as the Chaos Gods prevented their joyous victory.
Squeak! 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 Squeak!
The servant of Zench, the great conspirator, opened his cruel curved beak and once again gave vent to his frustration and his joy. Apart from his secret name, which would give anyone who learned it power over him, the Feathered Lord had, of course, names given to him by his fellow demons. One he hated, weaver of stratagems that fall apart. Others he carried proudly, the finder of ways, the great inventor. The great inventor, the Chikamizan Zonoi, was an inventor indeed. His name would resound forever in the new world that was to come. Two wars lay ahead. One was to defeat the god of the material galaxy, who kept the ruinous powers at bay. After that would come a greater war, the great war to decide which of the Chaos Gods was to rule the Materium. That god would be Zench, the master of fortune, the architect of fate. What other rightful ruler was there? Only Zench had the Promethean mastery of foresight. The rule of Nurgle would cause the whole galaxy to collapse in a morass of disease and decay. Slaanesh could look ahead only to organize ever greater excesses of depravity and dissolution. Khorne, the blood god, was contemptuous of forward-thinking altogether. Looking ahead was for cowards. He lived only to kill, slay and slaughter, without regard for consequences, only for the honour of battle. Just the same, an ally was needed, an ally to be betrayed once his usefulness was over. The Feathered Lord swooped down towards what appeared as a dark, uneven wall or floor. It was the realm of the Materium, a vast, unshaped mass as seen from the outside, a realm which had only three or four dimensions, as compared with the many and varying dimensions of the warp. A demon who was strong enough could look into that strangely constricted realm, sometimes, but generally he was barred from entering it. However, Chikamizan Zono flew downward to where the darkness cleared a little. This was known as the door. Behind it lay a limited region where a demon could materialize. Elsewhere he could do so only with extreme difficulty and the help of a mortal. Standing near the entrance, as if to deny access, was Kakasor Kayasakaami, a bloodthirster, a greater demon of Korn. His crimson fur, eternally dripping the blood of the slain, was but partly hidden by brief but richly decorated chaos armor of black and red. The uplifted triangular shoulder plates embossed with the shapes of skulls. His membranous black and crimson devil wings were folded behind him. Iron black horns ranged above his dog-like face with its glistening fangs. In his left hand, the greater demon held the stock of a wicked whip capable of reaching far, and in his right was the carved bone haft of an axe blessed by Korn, the black blade struck with a single rune. Chikamazon Zono knew well to be weary of that axe. It had another greater demon of Korn imprisoned within it. The bloodthirster spoke in a voice like that of a barking dog.
"We cannot be allies if I can defeat you."
The feathered lord carried only a rune sword, and he did not even draw it from its scabbard as he alighted. It would avail him little against the axe demon. Besides, his real weapon was magic. The energy of the warp shimmered as the bloodthirster moved his live-muscled body, as though he was surrounded by a fluorescent liquid. The whip snaked out and coiled into a knot-like skein, seeking to entrap the feathered lord and render him prey to the black axe. The Lord of Change uttered a purring sound and waved a talon claw. Warp energy congealed into a ribbon of light which laid itself along the writhing whiplash, turn for turn. The whip seemed to collapse, to turn black and become limp. The skein of light then disengaged itself and spiralled around the bloodthirster. With an angry growl, the Korn demon slashed around him with his war axe. A weapon inhabited by a greater demon has power over magic. The light crackled, broke apart, and fled.
No!
Cracking his whip once more, the bloodthirster flexed his body and whirled the battle axe over his head.
Eye of Zinch, I know your name!
The lie was intended to startle the feathered lord, to put fear into him and render him open to the bloodthirster's onrush, even if only momentarily. The Chikamazan Sonoi cackled with amusement. What simpletons the servants of Korn were, to think a lord of change could be deceived so. He crooned soft syllables, the etheric equivalent of spell runes. The baleful black blade aimed at his craning neck slowed, as if hacking through thick tar. The demon within strained to add its strength to the bloodthirster's, groaning audibly as if it sought to be free. For some moments, the axe hovered, moving neither one way nor the other. Suddenly, the Korn demon withdrew the weapon. Throwing down his whip, he made the sign of blood honour.
"You are worthy, Eye of Zench, but that does not make us comrades."
The Lord of Change clucked and cawed. In the warp, there was no friendship. Though emotion was the warp's chief constituent, that emotion was raw and primeval. If friendship had any counterpart, it was the Korn sense of battle companion.
"We are not finished yet, drinker of blood. We will stage the contest. If I win, you will give me what I want. If you win, I will give you a dozen worlds of your choosing."
"I am to trust the servant of the great betrayer."
The Chikamazan Zono's beak clacked shut. He turned his head from side to side, studying the berserker image of the bloodthirster with his stony gaze. It was common for greater demons of different lords not to understand one another's motives, despite their high intelligence. The one exception was a feathered lord, practiced in studying the hopes and fears of every living thing, whether of the physical world or the chaos realms.
"Yes, you are to trust a servant of the great betrayer. To betray visibly is to destroy one's own plans. To betray without reason is foolishness."
The Deathbringer of Korn, accustomed to turning his huge axe on his own followers in his bloodlust if the enemy should all be slaughtered before his berserker rage was slacked, moved threateningly on hearing this. He seemed to suspect he was being insulted.
"Come!"
he barked, in a word that was a challenge.
We go to the contest.
The two spread their wings, one feathered, one membranous. It was an advantage of being a greater demon that the quality of size, the greatest of the restrictions placed on merely physical beings, means nothing. Size is a property of matter only. The disparate pair, alloys of convenience if events fell that way, flew through the door, the narrow pass through which all this time the forces of chaos had been trying to overcome the materium. Spread before them was what, in comparison with the galaxy in its entirety, was but an antechamber. Still they could fly here, for the space of the warp and the space of the physical world overlaid one another here, like oil spreading and swirling on water, creating rainbow colours. This was what some mortals called the Eye of Terror. And, for rainbow colours, there was the suspension and warping of physical laws, making new types of worlds possible. The two great demons flew through entire star clusters, which, for the moment, were smaller than they were. They adjusted their size, dwindling as they approached their destination. Each selected a suitable planet from their respective domains. They moved those planets away from their warming suns. It did not matter. The planets did not freeze. Instead, their atmospheres were heated by friction as they moved through the ether like warp space, real space overlap. They brought the planets close together and drew out from the surface of each a long tongue or causeway so that they met and welded together. Here, then, was the field of battle, a verdant bridge between two worlds, lit by a glowing sky, blasted by hot winds, cracking with incessant lightning. On each of these worlds the war hosts were already assembled, officered by demon princes, its leading standard bearing the Eye of Zench, raising aloft every magical emblem, herded by chaos champions, half the population of the world belonging to Chikemazan Zono, armed and trained, mutated into their war roles, proceeded forth to the battle bridge. Officered by demon princes, its leading standard bearing the crossed bars emblem of Khorne, skull-filled banners, dripping blood, herded by chaos champions, half the population of the world belonging to Kakazo Koishakame, armed and trained, mutated, or else mutilated, into their battle roles, proceeded likewise. Far above, seated on floating thrones of gold and silver, the greater demons directed the game, relaying tactics to their captains. The war hosts of millions met. At first it seemed as if there was no strategy at all. The forces milled together, those in the rear pushing those in front onwards, so that in the crush half a million in each army was trampled to death by their own side. The slaughter of the slaves of Zench was great, for the conscripts of Khorne, raised since birth to regard maddened mass murder as the highest form of human achievement, laid about them with insane ferocity, and were apt to strike one of their own number with each backstroke of an axe or sword. Saliva foamed from the snout of the bloodthirster as he beheld the great slaying. 3 million enemy dead within the hour. A massed roar of impending victory rose through the lightning-seared air, joining the gory stench which now penetrated the atmosphere.
Blood for the blood god!
Then the strategy of the feathered lord came into play. His opening gambit had been but a sacrifice, with which to rob his opponent of all caution. Now he gave cool instructions to his princes. He had placed the more disciplined of his forces in the rear. Their columns opened, diverged, began to manoeuvre, weaving through the rampaging berserker mobs. Magic, now, began to prevail over brute force of will. Spell-blessed weapons over the warrior craving to kill. The Khorne horde became fragmented, squashed together in clumps, adding its blood to the blood that had already turned the pleasant verdure of the interplanetary bridge into a sticky red swamp. The Karak Akazor Kaishink Akimi spread his wings, and they quivered as he hovered over his throne, bellowing commands to his marshals below. Rage and frustration convulsed him. The confused clamour which drifted up from the battlefield was to him like a bitter wine that he must quaff and choke on. Were it not in breach of the agreement, he would have leapt down into the scene and laid about him, a titanic monster crushing minuscule human beings by the thousand. His battle direction had its effect. The host from the Corn World, a glowering, turbulent planet, unlike the bright, dazzling, sizzling sphere from the Zench Demance, rallied, succeeded in disengaging, and so gained a respite. Corn, too, could manoeuvre, though with less subtlety, in the pursuit of blood and bleached skulls, if defeat threatened. For a while, the two armies circled around one another on the vast plain, like two serpents preparing to mate or strike. Then, with a massed cry, a great roar of bestial savagery, the Corn Horde charged. The onrush was designed to overrun the enemy at one pass. The feathered lord let his beak gape. His long, thin tongue lolled. A yawn, not of ennui, but of languid interest. He had anticipated this. The host of the followers and slaves of Zench was pressed, yielded, gave up blood and torn flesh, and hoarse screams of agony, hacked bone and armour flying in all directions. It was impossible to move without treading on severed limbs and spilled torsos, so that the warriors slipped and slid on wrenched-out hearts and livers and entrails. But the feathered lord's calculations had proved correct. His war host had absorbed the push, and now the two armies were in melee, in which any further orders from above, any bellowed commands from the demon prince generals, went largely ignored. The perfect situation for Corn, one might think, but no. The Chikama Zan Zonoi's preparation was complete. The Corn Horde had lost its impetus. Not only that, but in the earlier second stage of the battle, carefully crafted by the Feathered Lord, the Bloodthirster had lost many, many more millions than he had noticed. He was now outnumbered. The Watching Lord of Change had successfully taken advantage of his impetuousness. By now, 50 million or more had died, 2/3 of them of Corn, 100 million more left for dead. Slowly, like a mass of amoeba, the roiling, raging conflict was moving, creeping towards one edge of the interplanetary bridge. There was no way that those who reached it could save themselves. Once they were pushed over the border by the pressing mass, the gravity which acted on the bridge itself was no longer present. First thousands, then millions, fell, flailing into space. A few, those with demonic protection, managed to stay alive without breathing. The vast majority were lost. And sooner or later, they all were attracted by one planet or the other and plummeted in flames through the perspective atmospheres. Despite the apparent loss of control over the bloody struggle, the Feathered Lord still had a tactic in progress. As the murderous morass moved, it had wheeled so that the greater number of those who toppled over the edge were Cornites. At length, the Kakakozo Koisha Akim slumped in his throne.
"You have won the game," he conceded in a grudging growl. "The Armory Hells are yours, and I shall join with you in what is now our war."
Contemptuously, he gestured to the planetary bridge.
"Let the killing continue. Kill them all. I shall punish my princes myself in our chaos realm for suffering defeat."
The Feathered Lord cawed softly in pleasure and acknowledgement. He did not, of course, disclose his opinion that the defeat of the Eater of Gore and Flesh had been a foregone conclusion. It would only anger the Son of Corn, whose unsubtle brain, in any case, would have been unable to follow such indirect reasoning. The Bloodthirster had defeated itself without knowing it. The lure of a major war against the Human Imperium, which Chaos would, for once, win, had sabotaged the way he had played the war game. He had wanted to lose. An exhausted exultation had gripped the battle scene. During the course of the battle, the linked worlds had rotated around their common centre of gravity several times, and many days had passed in continuous strife without sleep or rest. The greater demons flew off across the warp, leaving the bridge intact. The joined worlds would now whirl through space together everlastingly, like a dumbbell, magically lit and warmed. It would have the same effect as placing a stick to connect two formicaries. Half the population of each planet was still intact. Long after the battle was finished, those populations would continue venturing across the bridge into each other's worlds. The ingrained, glowering warlust of Corn meeting the traditional magic and manipulativeness of Zench, invasion and counter-invasion. The war would be unceasing and unending. Off across the region of the door they flew, deep into a spreading gloom and darkness, a Stygian abyss where writhing black vapours shut off the light of any surrounding star. Round and round they flew, spiralling inward, until a faint redness became visible in the distance. The Kakazai Koishak Akami's Forge Hellworlds came into view, worlds which, like many in the Duel, the Eye of Terror, would not have been possible elsewhere in the galaxy. 12 vast pits or funnels floated in space, arranged radially like the spokes of a wheel, mouths facing inwards to the hub. Every pit was planet-sized, 5,000 miles across at the mouths, 15,000 miles deep, extending into the darkness. No sun or nebula illuminated them. There was no need. The yawning mouth of each vast pit glared with a red glow and gave off infernal exhalations like burning smoke. The craggy outside walls of the hell pits glimmered only faintly in the gloom. Coming closer to one of the hell worlds, what looked like clouds of gnats or dust could be seen. Closer still, and it emerged that the mouths of the funnels were exhaling not just lurid smoke, but weapons. Weapons by the billions, as well as armour, swords, hammers, spears, pikes, war scythes, war chariots, motorised armoured vehicles, bolt guns, flamers, plasma weapons, artillery, spaceships, attack craft, all the arcane, semi-magical weapons used within the Eye of Terror, lasguns, dirks, demon-guided missiles, all drifting and spreading into the darkness of unlighted space. The Kakazov Kaishak Akim's Forge Worlds. As befitted bloodthirster crudity, they churned out stupendous quantities of armament willy-nilly, without regard for requirements, collection, or logistics. Nearly all of it would drift off into space and be lost, but more would always be there, if they should be needed. The bloodthirster enlarged himself and flew to each of the dozen hell funnels in turn, banging its outside with the flat of his warblade, causing it to vibrate. He barked out a message which carried through the warp to go ringing into each Hades-like interior.
Slaves! Eternally damned! You have a new master! Endure his torments as you have mine!
The Deathbringer was formally handing over the worlds to their new lord, but first the great inventor had to inspect his new property. He flew into the mouth of the nearest funnel, adjusting his size as he did so. The interior stretched away and dwindled into the far distance. The whole of it was filled with a cacophony and a fiery ruddy glow, and a stench composed of sulphurous fumes and the smoke of blood. The toiling millions, or perhaps billions, they had never been counted, the individual worth nothing, laboured on the inside surface amid seething seas and torrents consisting of boiling blood and molten sulphur. The directors were demons, the slave drivers chaos renegades. The great inventor was met by a demon prince who bowed with great reverence, though he could hardly have been pleased to have been abandoned by his lord and patron and consigned to the aegis of another chaos power. The prince had cast off his chaos armour. This was not a place where he would need to fight, and naked he could better show off his chaos gifts. His oiled, leathery skin gleamed in the furnace heat. His horned head, with eyes as fiery red as the scene behind him, sported a nose and mouth that had grown together into a single snout, while his arms, each with two elbows for greater agility, ended in bear-like paws, one of which gripped a whip adorned with barbs. His legs were of living metal, a truly fitting mutation for the supervisor of a forge world. He left the rostrum on which he stood and led the way to an air chariot.
Allow me the honour, most respected lord, of showing you the facilities.
The great inventor had to shrink himself still further to stand on the chariot's ornate platform, and even then he dwarfed the demon prince who ordered the vehicle. Once a living being, now a dragon-like machine, into motion. They flew over the steaming landscape, ignoring work parties suddenly engulfed in lava streams, ignoring the screeches of those drowning in molten sulphur, or the despairing screams of those sent to scoop up vats of liquid metal from the high-temperature seas, who instead lost their footing and tumbled from the crumbling headlands and floated on the glaring surface as charred slag. A dozen times, they alighted so the Feathered Lord could be shown examples of foundries, rolling mills, factories and workshops. The naked slaves, they weren't allowed clothing, protective or otherwise, made terrified obeisance when the greater demon appeared. Sometimes the Feathered Lord was displeased and ordered entire continents scorched. Becoming a little anxious at this, the princely supervisor of the Hell World proudly showed him the punishment pits, where those who failed to meet their productive quotas were put to endless torment, by burning, by racking, by slow slicing of internal organs. In the huge torture dungeons, they stood, taking in the wailing, the fearful gibbering, the pain-filled howling which echoed between the stone walls.
No unsatisfactory slave is allowed to die until every last drop of agony has been extracted from them, most glorious and noble one,
the demon prince assured him, in a tone at once servile and boastful. The Feathered Lord cast his unswerving gaze on the supervisor.
You do not know what dungeons, what devices, what facilities for everlasting torment exist in the Zench heavens, should you not serve me well,
he informed the corn-appointed demon prince coldly. He flew out of the gaping mouth of the redly glowing hell pit, and into the next one, and so on, until he had finished his inspection of all 12. Then he rejoined the Bloodthirster.
They are suitable. They will serve.
Then as we are companions in arms.
This was the moment the Bloodthirster had been waiting for. He peered from beneath his jutting brows, struggling with unfamiliar concepts.
Tell me why you want these worlds of mine. Is it true what you told me, that you have found the way to create matter?
My great invention. Am I not the great inventor?
The Lord of Change could not resist the boast. The name given him by his fellow demons was well deserved. He, and he alone, was to become the favourite of the highest of the Chaos Gods, the most favoured of Zench. His neck craned, and his beaked head, with its multicoloured crest, waved this way and that. He opened wide his beak, raising it to the heavens. His psychic voice cawed loud enough to echo throughout the door.
I can make matter!
The Bloodthirster responded with a doubtful growl.
Let me see this marvel.
The Feathered Lord held out a talon. He murmured words of power, deep magic. His mind became still as ice, calling on the multi-layered spells nested and imprinted in the warp, beyond mortal comprehension, spells that had taken millennia to form.
When we materialize in the immaterium, or even in the door, we must borrow the matter to do it, and that is hard.
He clucked softly.
That is all our difficulty. That is why we cannot burst into the materium and mould it to our will. But this is not borrowed matter. This is new.
A wavy, serrated blade had appeared in the Feathered Lord's talon. A short sword, one of the sinuous emblems of Zench, struck on its side. It gleamed with a blue sheen in the garish red light from the hell pits.
A new age dawns.
He withdrew his talon, leaving the weapon floating in space. The Bloodthirster seized it, hefted it, testing it. His wolfish face twisted in amazement.
And now,
the great inventor said,
I will take my tools.
He made a convoluted sign. He purred words of power. He exerted his will. The forge hell worlds were sucked straight into the warp. Thank you all for watching, everybody. Apologies for the pronunciation of the demons' names. They're ridiculously long and complicated, and I kind of forgot how to say it each time I said it. So sorry about that. If you'd like to support the channel, please use the links below, either on Patreon or becoming a YouTube member. If you like this video, please give the video a like. Subscribe if you're not subscribed, and let me know in the comments below what you think. I'd appreciate that. All right, have a good one. See you next time. Bye-bye.